Hey everyone, and welcome back. Today, we're diving into a world that's all around us, but we rarely think about it. It's complex mold processing.
It really is hidden magic.
I like that, hidden magic. That's a good way to put it. So we'll be taking a look at how things like car parts, phone cases, even tiny little components inside your electronics, how those intricate molds are made.
Yeah, it's like sculpting, but with metal.
Yeah, exactly, like sculpting with metal. We'll be using excerpts from this technical document called Nusher.
It's fascinating stuff.
I'm excited to dive in. So are you ready to uncover the secrets of mold making?
I am. Let's do it.
All right. So first up, cavity surface types. Our source compares it to picking the right shoes for a hike, which I love.
A good analogy.
I like that. So what are the different types and why is it so important to choose the right one?
Well, think about it. You wouldn't want to hike up a rocky mountain in flip-flops, right?
Definitely not.
You'd want sturdy hiking boots. Same logic applies here. Something smooth and cylindrical, like a pipe, requires a very different approach than something with flowing curves, like, let's say, the body of a car.
Right, like a car.
Yeah.
Okay, so how do you choose the right approach for those intricate freeform designs?
That's where high-speed milling comes in, HSM. Think of it like a super precise, super fast carving tool. Regular milling, it can handle simpler surfaces, but when you need to recreate those subtle curves of a car's body, you know, HSM is really the only way to get that level of detail and precision.
So that's the key to creating those sleek aerodynamic designs we see in cars these days. Wow, that's really cool.
It is pretty amazing what they can do with these machines.
Yeah, it is. But what about the inside of the mold? The source talks about the challenges of processing complex internal structures.
Right, it can get pretty tricky.
Yeah, that sounds complicated.
Like imagine building a ship in a bottle.
Oh, wow.
That's the level of complexity we're talking about. Undercuts, deep holes, thin walls. It's a real puzzle.
I can imagine. I'm trying to picture in my head, like, okay, how do you even carve something that's undercut?
Right.
Like, it seems impossible.
It's definitely challenging. Think about, like, the indentation on the bottom of a bottle that's an undercut. It's designed so the bottle can stand upright. To create features like that, you often need specialized techniques, like electrical discharge machining. EDM.
Okay, EDM. I've heard of it, but I don't really know how it works.
Imagine a tiny, controlled lightning bolt, and it's vaporizing metal very precisely.
Oh, wow.
That's essentially what EDM is. It uses electrical sparks to erode material so we can get those tricky undercuts and intricate features that normal cutting tools just, they can't handle.
So EDM is like the secret weapon.
That's one way to think about it.
I like it. Okay, what about those tilting tops that the source mentions?
Oh, yeah.
That sounds kind of like engineering magic to me.
Yeah, it's a neat trick. Sometimes, you know, instead of using EDM for undercuts, you can actually design a mold so that it tilts or rotates when you're removing the part.
Oh.
And that lets you release the part, even if it has those undercuts that would normally, you know, make it impossible to pull out straight.
So it's like you're outsmarting the geometry.
Exactly.
I like it. It sounds like a lot of problem solving, creative problem solving goes into this.
Yeah, it's not just brute force.
It's not just like go in there with a hammer and chisel.
Uh-huh. No, not quite.
Okay, good. So the source also talks about material personality, which I love.
Yeah, every material's got its own quirks, right?
It really does. So how does the material impact the mold making process?
Think about working with different types of wood.
Okay.
Some are really hard, like oak.
Yeah.
Some are softer, like pine.
Yeah.
Each requires different tools, different approaches.
So how does that translate to mold materials?
Well, you've got things like H13 steel, known for its strength, heat resistance, you know, really durable workhorse material.
Yeah.
But it's also tough to machine. Needs specialized tooling, careful parameters, or else the tools will wear out really quickly.
Wow.
Imagine trying to carve a statue out of granite, you know?
Yeah. It takes time. The right tools.
It does, it does.
What about the softer materials?
Well, they can be easier to work with in some ways, but they have their own challenges.
Uh-huh.
They can be prone to sticking, tearing, or even deforming.
Oh.
So you might need special coatings on your tools, adjust the cutting parameters.
I see.
It's kind of like trying to sculpt with clay that's too wet. It'll just lose its shape.
It'll just, yeah, it'll slump.
Exactly.
So it's a balancing act.
It is.
You got to choose the right material for the job, then figure out how to work with it.
Exactly.
Okay, so now we're getting to the part where we're actually making the mold. The source mentions roughing, semi-finishing, and finishing.
Right.
It really does sound a lot like sculpting.
That's a perfect analogy. You wouldn't start a sculpture by focusing on the fine details.
Right, you'd start with the big picture.
Exactly. You'd create the rough shape,
right,
refine it, and then add the finishing touches at the end.
Okay.
It's the same with mold making.
So walk me through the process.
All right, so roughing is all about removing large amounts of material quickly.
Okay.
Larger tools, aggressive cutting.
Mm-hmm.
Get close to the final shape without worrying too much about the details. Kind of like sketching the outline.
Yeah.
And then semi-finishing, you start to refine the shape using smaller tools, taking finer cuts to get closer to those final dimensions, smooth out any rough edges.
Okay, so this is where you start to smooth things out.
Exactly.
And then finishing, that's when you achieve that perfect smooth surface.
Right. That stage requires the highest level of precision. Very fine tools, tiny, precise cuts. Got to get that surface quality and dimensional accuracy just right. The level of precision here is amazing. We're talking tolerances of a few thousandths of a millimeter.
Wow.
Less than the width of a human hair.
That's incredibly precise.
It is.
I can't even fathom that. So to achieve that level of accuracy, you need some serious equipment. The source refers to equipment and fixtures as a superhero team, with each member playing a vital role.
They all have their parts to play.
I like that. So let's meet the team. Who are the star players?
Well, the MVP in most shops is the high-precision CNC machine.
Okay.
CNC stands for Computer Numerical Control. You feed them a digital model of the mold, and they execute the machining operations.
Oh, wow.
Speed and accuracy is incredible.
It's almost like a 3D printer, but instead of adding material, it's taking it away.
That's a good way to think about it.
Yeah.
And just like 3D printing, the resolution and precision of CNC machines is constantly improving. We're talking about machines that can position the cutting tool within a few microns, which is just mind-bogglingly small.
It's amazing what technology can do these days.
It really is.
You mentioned fixtures as well. What role do they play in all of this?
Well, fixtures are like the unsung heroes. They're the ones making sure everything stays exactly where it needs to be while the CNC machine is doing its thing.
Okay.
So specialized clamps and supports holding that mold work piece securely in place.
So they're like a steady hand.
Exactly.
For the CNC machine.
And the design of the fixtures themselves, they can be quite complex.
Oh, I bet.
Custom made for each mold, each machining operation. Sometimes they even use vacuum suction to hold things in place.
Wow, I never realized how much work goes into all of this behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing when you think about it, right?
I mean, I'm looking around my house right now, and I'm just thinking, like, all this stuff, all these plastic bits, all these metal parts, they all probably started with a mold.
It's true. We really do encounter molds in their products everywhere we go.
That's true. Well, after this, I'm definitely going to be looking at things a little bit differently.
I think you will.
Okay, so we're not done yet. We still have to talk about surface treatments. What role do those play in the mold making process?
Ah, surface treatments. That's like adding the finishing touches, the polish that makes everything shine.
Literally and figuratively.
Exactly. They enhance both the performance and the look of the mold.
So it's not just about making the mold precise. It's about making it look good and last a long time.
Right. It's got to be durable.
Okay, so what kind of surface treatments are we talking about?
Well, one common technique is nitriding. It's a heat treatment process that infuses nitrogen into the surface of the steel, makes it super hard, wear resistant, almost like giving the mold a suit of armor.
Oh, I like that.
Protects it from wear and tear during that molding process.
Okay, so it's all about longevity.
Yeah, making that mold last.
What about chrome plating? Isn't that popular too?
Chrome plating is very popular. Adds a thin layer of chromium to the surface that enhances wear resistance, corrosion resistance, and of course it gives the mold that shiny mirror-like finish.
I knew it was more than just aesthetics.
Oh yeah, it's got practical benefits too.
Good, good. Our source also mentions electrochemical polishing. What is that all about?
That's like a high-tech spa treatment for the mold.
Oh, I like it. Tell me more.
Uses an electrochemical reaction to smooth and polish the surface. Gets into those hard-to-reach areas that you just can't get to with normal polishing methods. Ideal for complex shapes, cavities. You need a flawlessly smooth surface.
So it's like a super precise buffing technique.
You got it. And it's not just for looks. It can also make it easier to eject the part from the mold.
Yeah.
Prevents sticking, damage.
Wow, so much goes into this. It's really amazing.
Yeah, it's a fascinating process.
It is a fascinating process. It's art, it's science, it's engineering.
A little bit of magic too.
And I think we're just getting started on our deep dive into this world. I'm eager to learn more, so stay tuned for part two, where we'll unravel even more secrets of the mold-making world.
Welcome back to our deep dive into complex mold-making.
I'm ready to go even deeper. So in part one, we got a good overview of the challenges involved, choosing the right material, figuring out how to deal with those complex internal structures. We talked about fixtures and all the different surface treatments.
Yeah, laid a good foundation.
Yeah, we did. We did. So now that we've got that foundation, I'm excited to zoom in on some of the specific machining strategies. I want to learn more about the whole process planning thing.
Okay, sounds good. Let's dive back into high-speed machining then. HSM, yeah. Remember, it's the go-to for creating those intricate freeform surfaces we talked about. Curves of a car body, contours of a phone case.
Right, like a super precise, super fast carving tool.
Exactly. But there's more to it than just speed. One crucial factor is the tool path strategy.
Oh, okay.
Think of it like the route the cutting tool takes as it carves away the material. In HSM, we often use a technique called continuous machining or constant chip load.
Okay, constant chip load.
Yeah.
I'm gonna need you to break that down for me.
Imagine you're using a chisel to carve wood.
Okay.
If you're taking like uneven, jerky cuts, that surface is going to be rough. Constant chip load is like taking smooth, consistent scoops, removing the same amount of material with each pass.
Ah, okay, so it's like consistency.
Yeah, consistency leads to a much smoother finish.
So why is that so important in mold making? Like, why does it have to be so smooth?
Well, for one, a smoother mold surface means the part you make from it will have a better surface finish.
Makes sense.
Think about like the sleek, glossy finish on a brand new phone,
Right,
right?
right.
That's directly because of that polished mold surface.
So it's aesthetics, but also functionality.
Exactly. Also reduces wear and tear on the mold itself.
Ah,
Kind of
sick.
like, driving on a smooth highway versus a bumpy dirt road.
Right.
Smoother means less friction, longer mold life, lower maintenance costs.
It's like investing in good tires.
Yeah.
So how do you actually achieve this constant chip load in HSM?
It's a balancing act. Tool geometry, cutting speed, feed rate, depth of cut.
Okay.
It's like a recipe. Too much of one ingredient, not enough of another, the whole thing can go sideways.
Right. It's not just as easy as setting the machine to high speed and letting it rip.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Luckily, we have sophisticated software programs that help us calculate these optimal parameters, for each material and tool combination.
Gotta be helpful.
Oh, it is. It is. But you still need a skilled operator who understands the nuances of the process, can make adjustments on the fly.
So you still need that human touch.
You do. You do. And speaking of touch, let's talk about tool selection.
Okay.
Just like a chef needs different knives,
Right.
a mold maker needs an arsenal of cutting tools.
I'm picturing like this giant toolbox, all these crazy bits and drills.
Oh, it is a pretty impressive sight.
What are some of the key players in the HSM toolbox?
Well, for HSM, we typically use solid carbide tools. Incredibly hard, can withstand those high speeds, high temperatures.
Yeah.
Cutting through steel, you need something tough.
They're like the heavy duty workhorses.
They are. And within that category, you have different geometries, different purposes. Ball nose end mills, great for contoured surfaces. Square end mills, better for precise flat surfaces. Really depends on what you're trying to create.
So many options.
It is like a painter with all their different brushes.
Right. Makes sense. Okay, so let's shift gears a bit. Let's talk about those complex internal structures, the undercuts, the deep, narrow cavities, stuff that's super challenging to machine
Right.
with traditional methods.
We touched on EDM, electrical discharge machining, for those.
Right.
Can you remind me how that works again?
Yeah.
Why it's so good for those tricky shapes?
Refresh my memory.
Remember those tiny controlled lightning bolts? That's EDM.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of cutting, it uses those electrical sparks to erode material away, almost like vaporizing it.
It's like science fiction almost.
It is a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
How do we control those sparks to create these precise
Yeah,
shapes?
that's what I don't get.
That's where the electrode comes in.
Ugh.
Shaped piece of conductive material, usually copper or graphite. It acts as a guide for the sparks.
Oh, okay.
So the electrode is carefully crafted to match the shape you want to create.
So it's like sculpting with electricity.
Exactly. And the electrode is moved toward the workpiece, and those electrical pulses create sparks, slowly eroding away the material to create the desired shape.
That's incredible.
This is pretty amazing. Think about the intricate gears in a watch or the cooling channels in a jet engine.
Wow, okay, yeah.
EDM lets us shape really hard materials.
So that's why it's so important.
Yeah, opens up a world of possibilities. But it's not a fast process,
Yeah.
especially with complex shapes and hard materials. But the precision is worth it. And the technology is getting better all the time. High-speed EDM machines that can really reduce the machining time without sacrificing the accuracy.
The technology is always evolving, isn't it?
It is. But that innovation isn't just about the machines themselves.
Right.
It's also about how we plan and execute the entire mold-making process.
So let's talk about that. Process planning.
Okay, process planning.
Mm.
It's the blueprint, the roadmap for creating the mold.
The master plan.
Exactly.
Mm.
We define the sequence of machining operations, choose the tools, determine the machining parameters, every step from raw material to finished product.
So it's like a recipe.
It is. And just like a good recipe, a well-developed process plan makes all the difference.
I see.
Ensures consistency, reduces errors, saves time, saves money.
So important.
Yeah. It's all about thinking ahead.
Anticipating those challenges.
Right. So what are the key considerations when you're developing this plan?
Yeah, break it down for me.
Okay. First and foremost, you gotta understand the design. Dimensions, tolerances, surface finishes, any special features.
Right. You gotta know what you're aiming for.
Exactly. Then, the material choice.
Mm.
We talk about how materials have different personalities when it comes to machining.
Right. Right.
Some are easy to work with, some are more demanding.
Some are divas.
Yes, some are definitely divas. You got to know what you're dealing with. Once we understand the design, the material, then we can start mapping out the actual sequence of machining operations.
So how does that work? What does that look like?
Well, it usually follows a logical progression. Start with roughing, remove a lot of material quickly.
Like the rough draft?
Yep. You get the basic shape down.
Yeah.
Then semi-finishing to refine the shape and smooth out those rough edges.
Okay.
And finally, those finishing operations. That's where we really dial in the surface quality, get those tolerances just right.
So it's all about precision at that point.
Yeah. Each stage, we're choosing the right tools, the right speeds, feed rates, depths of cut.
It's a science.
It is. It's a delicate balancing act.
It is. It sounds very detailed and complex.
It is. It's the foundation for success. But luckily, again, we have those software programs to help us.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah, simulate the whole process virtually.
That's got to be a time saver.
Oh, huge time saver. We can test different tool paths, optimize cutting parameters, spot any potential problems before they even happen.
So it's like a dress rehearsal.
Yeah, exactly. Virtual rehearsal before the main event.
I like it. So technology is playing a huge role here.
Huge role. It's still a collaborative effort between humans and technology.
Of course, of course.
Software provides the tools, but you still need that skilled mold maker to guide the process, make those critical decisions.
Yeah, it's that human expertise that's really important.
It is. It is. And there's still more to explore. In part three, we're going to take a closer look at those finishing touches, the specialized techniques, the tools they use to measure and make sure everything is perfect.
I can't wait to learn more about those final steps. See you in part three. And we're back for the final part of our deep dive into complex mold processing. It's been a fascinating journey, exploring the ins and outs of creating these incredible tools that shape so many everyday objects.
I agree. We've delved into the challenges, the materials, the machining strategies, even touched upon the artistry involved.
It really is a blend of science, engineering, and a little bit of magic, isn't it?
Absolutely. And today, we'll be focusing on those final steps, the finishing touches that elevate a mold from good to exceptional.
I'm ready to uncover the secrets of achieving that flawless finish.
Well, it's a multifaceted process involving both specialized techniques and meticulous quality control.
Let's start with those specialized techniques. Why is achieving that smooth, mirror-like surface so crucial?
It goes beyond aesthetics, although that's certainly a factor. A highly polished mold surface has several functional advantages.
Like what?
For one, it significantly improves the release properties of the mold, makes it easier to eject the part, reduces the chance of sticking or damage.
Ah, so less friction, less wear and tear, smoother production overall.
Precisely. And it directly impacts the surface finish of the molded part itself.
Right. A rough mold surface would create a rough part, even if the material is inherently smooth.
Exactly. A smooth mold also reduces wear and tear on itself, extending its lifespan and minimizing maintenance.
So those tiny details really do add up to big benefits in the long run.
Absolutely. Now, achieving these pristine surfaces requires more than just elbow grease.
I bet. It's not like polishing your car.
Not quite. Mold polishing demands a high level of precision, control, and specialized tools.
So what are some of the tools and techniques used for this delicate task?
We employ various advanced polishing methods, like ultrasonic polishing and magnetic abrasive finishing, to achieve those impeccable surfaces.
Those sound incredibly high-tech. Can you elaborate?
Sure. Ultrasonic polishing utilizes high-frequency vibrations to create tiny bubbles in a slurry of abrasive particles.
Okay.
These bubbles implode against the mold surface, gently removing imperfections and creating a smooth, uniform finish.
So it's like a miniature power wash for molds, but with sound waves.
That's a fantastic analogy. And it's particularly effective for polishing those hard-to-reach areas, like the inside of complex cavities.
That makes sense. What about magnetic abrasive finishing?
This method employs magnetic forces to control the movement of abrasive particles.
Oh.
Creating a sort of magnetic brush that conforms to the shape of the mold.
Wow, so it's like a flexible polishing tool that can reach even the most intricate spots.
Exactly. This magnetic brush glides over the surface, eliminating imperfections and leaving a consistent, polished finish.
It sounds almost like magic. But even with these advanced techniques, how do you determine when you've reached that flawless finish?
That's where metrology comes into play.
Metrology. Is that like the study of measurements or something?
You got it. Metrology is the science of measurement, and it's crucial for ensuring that the mold meets those precise specifications.
So it's like quality control for molds, making sure everything's perfect.
Precisely. One common tool is the coordinate measuring machine, or CMM.
CMM. What does that stand for?
Coordinate measuring machine. Imagine a robotic arm with a super sensitive touch probe.
Okay.
This probe measures the mold's dimensions with incredible accuracy, creating a 3D map of the surface.
No, it's like a 3D scanner for molds.
Exactly. This digital map is then compared to the original design to identify even the tiniest deviations.
Wow. So nothing escapes the scrutiny of metrology.
Pretty much. We also use optical profilometers to measure surface roughness at the nanometer scale and interferometers to check flatness or curvature with incredible precision.
It's like a whole arsenal of high-tech tools ensuring every detail is perfect.
Indeed. And as technology advances, these tools become even more sophisticated, pushing the boundaries of precision.
It's incredible to think about the meticulous effort that goes into this process, from conception to that final polish.
It truly reflects the dedication and expertise within the mold-making world.
Yeah.
And it transforms how we perceive the objects around us.
Absolutely. The phone in my hand, the keyboard I'm typing on, the coffee cup on my desk, they all began as raw material, shaped with incredible precision.
And understanding that process deepens our appreciation for the ingenuity and craftsmanship behind these everyday objects.
Well said. This deep dive has been an eye-opening experience. Thank you for being such a knowledgeable guide. I've learned so much.
The pleasure was all mine. I hope our listeners will join us again for another fascinating exploration into the world of making.
I'm sure they will. Until next time, stay curious and keep exploring the world around you.